I have a story to share with you, an old story. It might be familiar to some of you, but I invite you to hear it this morning with fresh ears. Even if you have heard it 100 times, I invite you to listen as if it is the very first time. I'll try telling it that way too. So a long time ago, there were a couple of fishermen who had just decided to call it a day. They were pretty bummed because they'd been out on the sea all day, but they hadn't caught a thing. Fishing was their livelihood, so actually they weren't just bummed, they were a little scared. Would they be okay? Would they have enough to feed their families, to pay their bills? It didn't happen very often, I mean a whole day without anything to show for it. But it did happen. Try again tomorrow, they figured. So there they were, packing up their stuff, washing their nets, when this guy headed towards them, and without a word, he got into one of their boats. You can imagine they were more than a little irritated. Hey, guy, what are you doing? Those are our boats. The man didn't answer. This was getting weird. Push me out a bit into the water, would you? He said. As they got closer to him, they realized they actually knew this guy. He'd been at one of their houses a couple weeks back. He'd done this new agey kind of thing. What was it called? One of the fishermen asked the other. Reiki, he said. I think it's called Reiki. It was pretty cool, they had to admit. I mean, people who'd been sick, he just did this thing with his hands, and he kind of touched them, and it was like, whew, they were just totally fine. They both agreed he was a pretty cool guy, albeit still pretty weird. But really, I mean, getting in their boats, telling them to push them out in the water, especially after a day like they'd had, I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? We're done for the day, they said. We didn't catch anything. We're headed home. But he was insistent. Get your nets. Come with me. We need to go out there, into the deep water. Maybe you didn't hear me, one of the guys said. It was a bust. It's time to go home. The man wasn't giving up. The fishermen looked at each other and sighed. They did feel like they kind of owed him the benefit of the doubt after all he'd done to help their family and friends. And they couldn't say for sure if the place he was pointing to was a place they'd already tried. Maybe he knew something. And so they got their nets together, got back into the boats, and like he said, moved into the deep water. Dropped their nets down deep. And lo and behold, they caught so many fish, their nets started to break. So they called out to their buds on the shore, their fishing partners, James and John were their names, told them to come out too. Give it another shot, they said. James and John were skeptical, of course, having had that same luck earlier. But they saw all the fish and quickly pushed off, dropped their nets too, out deep. So there were 5 of them out there, overflowing with more fish than they knew what to do with. They were overwhelmed. To think just a couple hours before they'd wondered how they'd even have enough for dinner. Now, to say that these were the kinds of guys that didn't cry much, that would be an understatement. But right there, the one called Peter broke down, tears streaming down his face. I can't believe this, he said. What just happened? How did this happen? I mean, who are you? We're not worthy. The other guys kind of laughed a little at that, but they too were moved beyond words. The strange man looked at each of them, and with great love in his voice, he said, "Don't be afraid. Today, your lives changed. Next, we'll get to work on the rest of the world. Sound good?" And with that simple invitation and all they'd seen and heard, they returned to the shore, and then they left their boats and their nets behind and began a new life. Now, in the fuller version of this story, the strange man Jesus was his name, in case you didn't catch that. He came to the boats because he'd been trying to escape the crowd that he had been preaching to earlier in the day. He realized he actually needed a smaller circle to ground his teaching, to help him stay honest and human. Besides, in a big crowd, he knew people have a kind of anonymity that allows them to listen without much accountability. It's kind of like on a Sunday morning, how we can all come and go without really knowing each other. I mean, you can be present, you can show up, but you can still remain kind of distant. You can let your mind wander, checking in and out of the sermon. I mean, I'm not saying that's what you do. I'm just saying in a big group, in a couple hundred, it is possible. Sociologists have actually shown that the size of a group determines a lot about that group's capacity and function. For example, if we want to experience a sense of community, our upper limit is 150 people. About the size of this front sanctuary, by the way. Not the back part. 150 people isn't the limit of how many people you can know in total, of course. It's just how many you can meaningfully experience as a single community. How many interrelated people and the details of their interrelationships that you can keep track of in your brain. There are other upper limits that sociologists have discovered, depending on the desired function of a group. The one relevant to our purposes today is the number 15. 15 is the upper limit to what your brain can experience and navigate if you want a group to function as what we might call a care and support group, or a sympathy group. This is the kind of group that I think Jesus was searching for when he went to the boats that day. He ultimately, we know, assembled a group of 12, but on that day he started with 4. As church consultant Susan Beaumont says, this type of group is considered a foundational social grouping for human beings. The relationships found in this type of group provide us intimacy, mutual support, and care. Now, when I hear this as the group's goal and the number 15, I think the sociologists have seriously overestimated our capacity. I mean, anywhere past like 10 or 12 and things get pretty tricky, right? I mean, not everybody is bonded to the other, and trust isn't quite as robust as it is in a smaller group. There's just too much to keep track of in that size. I mean, if you're really aiming for intimacy, something more like 5, 6, 8. In that size group, if people are committed and present for one another, intimacy can happen. Everyone can see everyone else, care for everyone else, and you can keep track of everyone else in that size. Anonymity, it's just no longer possible in that size. I mean, there's no getting around that everyone has to pitch in order to make that group work. Like in our story, the first two boats, they would have sank if those fishing partners wouldn't have come out to take some of those fish. Now, intimacy does happen in small groups, but it doesn't just happen. The small size is a necessity, but it's just the beginning. In order for this group to serve the purpose of care and support, connection to self, others, and something larger, you might say, it has to do what Jesus reminds the fishermen they need to do. The group itself needs to go deep. Now, don't you wonder, why didn't those fishermen go into those waters before Jesus told them to? I mean, it was their job, right? Theoretically, they would have thought of that. I wonder if, like many of us, the routine of their lives had left them just a little less than conscious. So much so that they could get through their whole day without ever really venturing into deep waters. I mean, they meant to. They know that often the real return is there. But there are errands to run and emails to return, traffic to navigate, kids to feed, and so sometimes we need that explicit invitation to slow down, to go where the real sustaining stuff is, to put our nets down there. But then again, maybe the fishermen had already put their nets into that same place, just as deep as Jesus instructed. Maybe it's like the IT helpline phenomenon. You know the one? You know, where you have a computer issue you just cannot fix. You've been working on it for hours and you finally just decide to give up. So you call the IT helpline and the IT helper basically tells you to do the same thing you've already tried 100 times and for some reason this time it works. So annoying. But your annoyance doesn't stop you from being grateful that your problem is fixed, from feeling like there must have been something you didn't do before. And maybe there was. Maybe there wasn't. I think we can never underestimate the power of a witness with a clear script. The witness is someone who's simply present to say, I see you, I'm listening, I'm paying attention to you, to your struggle, your confusion, right here and now. And that script is that thing that person does without fail, the proven protocol that they walk you through to help you safely navigate those deep waters. In small groups, it's like the, have you tried rebooting of life change? Actually, one of the ways I think about Jesus is as a powerful witness with a clear script. Have you tried love one another? In our small groups, the witness is your facilitator to begin, and ultimately it is all of your fellow group members. And the script is the clear curriculum and protocol that you follow to help you delve into the deep in safe and clear ways. Together, you and your group set aside time to go deep. And by witnessing one another's stories and struggles, you find more sustenance than you ever thought possible. Which brings us finally to the end of our story. After the fishermen cast their nets into the deep, they get back tons and tons of fish, and they pretty much at that point freak out, which I think makes sense, right? I mean, how do you react when your life is about to change or has changed? When you realize your life suddenly matters in new ways, that you matter in new ways. I'm not worthy. As Marianne Williamson has said, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. We ask, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Now, if you know the source material at all, you know I changed the ending words. I changed a few other words, too, but the ending words in particular. What Jesus actually says is, come with me, and from this day forward, you will be fishers of men. Or in today's translation, fishers of people. Now, there are whole sermons, lots and lots of them, written on the meaning of these words. And so for today, my rewrite will have to stand in for a fuller exegesis. Your life has been changed. Now, let's go change the rest of the world. You have experienced a blessing. Now go and be a blessing. People who study social change, like sociologist Peter Block, they've come to believe that the unit of transformation, the ways the world can and does change, is through small groups the size of those care and support groups. Groups of 5, 6, 8, 12. But these groups change the world only in as much as the group members refuse to isolate their experiences. Only in as much as they share all those fish with more than just each other. This is the charge of any small group ministry and the charge of covenant itself. And we might even say, as Unitarian Universalists, the call of our lives in total. Having experienced healing, health, transformation, we are invited to pass it on. In this way, and in all of the ways I have described, you may be realizing that small group ministry might best be understood as the best way for us to practice our Unitarian Universalist faith. We know that each of us has just a small piece of the truth, And so we need each other's insights, encouragement, witness. We know we are made whole through relationships of mutual accountability and trust, and by allowing the blessing we experience with one another to bless the larger world. This is the invitation we set before you this morning in our small group ministry program. We invite you to look over all the materials that describe the many options for small groups, and we invite you to find yourself there. You can fill out the form that's attached to the, it's like rainbow colored. There's a form that's the third page. You can fill that out and drop it in the office or at the board table where the council members will be after the between the services. Or, very exciting, you can go online to the front page of our website. In the bottom left-hand corner of our website, it says Small Group Ministry, Find Your Place. And guess what? There's a form there that you can fill out and you can just submit it. And I've done it a few times and it's simple and easy. And so either way, you can either fill it out by hand or you can fill it out online. My friends, no matter how you do it, you are invited to find your place, your beginning place, your place where you can cast your net deep, your place where you can be blessed in a way that inspires you, that is to say us, all of us, to bless the whole world. My friends, change, healing, hope, these things start when you say we, and you know who you mean. And each day, you mean one more. Let's get started. Blessed be.